seconds. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket of will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. Live, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Welcome into a brand new week of Drive Time Sports. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. I always look forward to being with you, especially on Mondays. I've said this for years, my two favorite shows of the week, Monday and Friday, because there's so much to break down, there's so much to preview on both of those days. Now with the NFL, we're down to the final four teams. I don't know if we have the two best teams in the NFC. We have one of them for sure, Green Bay. There's no doubt. They're the best team in the NFC. I don't know about Tampa. I don't know. I do believe we have the two best teams in the AFC, and I do not believe that is debatable. Although, one of them got a scare and received the benefit of the doubt on a major, major call that could have reversed that game as far as a helmet-to-helmet hit at the goal line. Look, all four games I thought over the weekend were entertaining. There were nuances to each that I found fascinating. I enjoyed it. And I think the football's only going to be better over the next week as four teams try to get into the Super Bowl. Kansas City, Buffalo, Green Bay, Tampa. You know, we're going to be talking about this all week. We'll talk about the four games, and what about the four teams that lost? I mean, Cleveland was a terrific story all year long. The Browns were fantastic, and they had their opportunity. I mean, really, I'm watching this game on Sunday yesterday, and I'm thinking, Cleveland's going to win this. When Patrick Mahomes goes down and is ruled out for the remainder of the game, I really thought the Browns were going to win that game. Henny comes in, throws an interception in the end zone. Oh my gosh. It's going to be Buffalo and Cleveland in the AFC Championship. We'll talk more about this game a little bit later. Baltimore, they ran into some bad luck, although they're not better than Buffalo, because I can use the same logic with the Rams and Green Bay. I picked the Rams to win that game. The Rams were not even close to being healthy. Aaron Donald was not even 70% in that game. And you saw just how important he is to that team. Yet I thought Green Bay played a near-perfect game. Aaron Rodgers did. I mean, he was just a surgeon the entire time out there on the field. There were some drops in the cold weather that weren't Aaron Rodgers' fault. I thought the Rams and the Ravens ran into some bad luck. New Orleans, you know, it's really hard to beat a good team three times. It really, really is. And Drew Brees just did not look very good in that game. And I got to say this once again, and I know we'll get to this a little bit later on in the show. Tom Brady did not look great last night either. You know who did? Devin White. He was phenomenal. He was so good. He dominated that game yesterday. And the Tampa Bay defense stepped up, made life very, very easy on their 43-year-old quarterback with several short drives. Still, I didn't think Tom Brady was great in that game. And I do not believe that Tampa Bay is going to go on the road and beat Green Bay and Lambeau. Again, we'll be able to have that conversation all week. Really, the only team that I thought did not encounter bad luck was New Orleans. I thought they lost that game based off of their own blunders. They were just really, I mean, offensively, they were so bad yesterday. You know, you look at the other games, Buffalo's just better than Baltimore. Green Bay's just better than the Rams. Some nuances didn't help either of those teams. And Cleveland was probably the best story of the postseason. That's my take on what happened over the weekend. We'll dive a little bit deeper into it later on in the show. How about some coaching news? It broke last night that the Los Angeles Chargers have their guy. Didn't take very long to find him because, well, they only had to look across the hallway. Brandon Staley is the new head coach of the Los Angeles Chargers. This broke late last night. I thought that Staley would get a head coaching job. I've been saying this for weeks here on the show. Because the fact of the matter is, Sean McVay has put together a very successful four-year stint. There's one quarterback in the NFL that has more wins than Jared Goff over the past 4 years, and that's Tom Brady. So think about that. That's how successful Sean McVay has been in Los Angeles. And that's why Matt LaFleur was poached by Tennessee and then became the head coach in Green Bay. That's why Zach Taylor was poached by Cincinnati. He's now a head coach. Brandon Staley, once again, poached by the Chargers. It's a compliment to the Rams franchise that these coordinators keep getting better jobs year in and year out because it's a successful program. However, I did find it odd that this was the guy the Chargers went with based on his defensive expertise. It is the one thing that surprised me. Eric Bieniemy, I thought, checked every box for the Chargers. And I know Brandon Staley's a former quarterback, played quarterback in high school, played quarterback in college. I just thought the Chargers would definitely go with someone that could evolve Justin Herbert, who had a tremendous rookie season. But when I look at the talent that Charger squad has defensively, I think Brandon Staley may actually be a pretty good fit. It's the flashy hire. It really is. It's the flashy hire. The young gun who moved his way up, very innovative, bright mind. Chargers now have their guy, which means we have two teams looking for a head coach. We have the Texans. We have the Eagles. Those are the two teams that are looking for their head coach, and that's it. And then we're set, and we know what to expect moving into next year as long as there's no more coaches let go at this stage in the game, which I really don't believe there will be. So if I got to rate the hire for the Chargers, give it an A. I think they got one of the youngest, brightest minds in the NFL, and the lack of retreads, I like. Jacksonville goes out and gets Urban Meyer. Jets get Robert Sala. Falcons with Arthur Smith. Dan Campbell with the Lions. Brandon Staley with the Chargers. These aren't retreads. Although there is one retread that I'm quite fond of still sitting out there, and that's Doug Peterson. That's really the headlines in the national sports scene. You know, there is one tidbit in college football, and I don't believe that this is a shock to anyone, at least it should not be, that Jeremy Pruitt has been fired as Tennessee's head coach following a week-long investigation into potential recruiting violations with the program. The termination letter was sent to Pruitt by Tennessee officials today, and they concluded, quote, the conduct by at least two assistant coaches and several recruiting staff members are likely to lead to an NCAA finding of level one or level two violations of one or more governing athletic rules. The university concluded that these likely findings were the result of either your material neglect or lack of reasonable preventative compliance measures. Tennessee, it's just been a train wreck since Philip Fulmer, hasn't it? And speaking of Fulmer, he plans to retire after leading the athletic department for more than 3 years. I mean, really, this is just once Fulmer coached Tennessee from 92 to 2008, he went 152-52 during that time and won a national championship. Since that point, Tennessee football has been a complete and utter train wreck, and it doesn't look like they're going to get out of this anytime soon. Now they're looking for a new head coach. Let's take a look at what's happening in the NBA. We've had games literally all day, and they will continue into the evening. Right now, we have a contest going on between Phoenix and Memphis, 43-41 in the second quarter. Phoenix up on the Grizzlies. That game is on TNT. Finals from earlier today. The Knicks, topped the Magic 91-84. We get Atlanta over Minnesota 108-97. And then the Spurs topped the Blazers 125-104. Still to come tonight on TNT, Milwaukee and Brooklyn. That contest will begin right after Phoenix and Memphis. It's scheduled for a 5:30 start. We get Dallas and Toronto at 5:30, 6 o'clock hour. It's the Pistons and the Heat, plus the Rockets and the Bulls. 8 o'clock tonight, nightcap on TNT, Warriors-Lakers. Again, that's an 8 p.m. start time. That's a quick look at what's happening at the national sports front. Local sports recap is coming up. Plus, we're going to be joined by USU Eastern women's basketball coach Chelsea Warburton. You know, they start the season this week. We'll talk about that and more when we return right here on Drive Time Sports.
What you listening to?
Big Sports Radio Guy.
Prepare the water cooler that we may gather around it later and discuss things.
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
High school basketball has been off and rolling now for almost 2 months. Seriously, season's been going on for a little while. We have not had any junior college basketball, but that'll change this week. In fact, we have a lot of sports picking up. Basketball, baseball, softball, volleyball, all that's going to be going on at the exact same time for USU Eastern. Thursday night, the USU Eastern Lady Eagles will play their first contest of the season as they welcome in Arizona Western. We'll talk about that and more right now with our first guest of the week, Coach Chelsea Warburton of the USU Eastern Eagles. Coach, always a pleasure. I appreciate the time. Great to hear from you again. Thank you.
Yes, thanks. It's great to be here.
Yeah, it's great to start talking about basketball, Coach. For way too many months, we were talking about the possibility of actually playing. And now, as you mentioned, before we hopped on the air, it's game week. We finally made it to this point.
Yeah, like I said, we've stayed hopeful, and it's finally here, game week, and we're just super excited about it. I know the girls have been waiting, and, you know, they've done a good job of just staying engaged, so we're excited for them.
Coach, I've had the opportunity to talk with Coach Evans over the last couple of weeks just about all the preparation and extra work that goes into it as far as the COVID protocols and some of the things that you guys have had to do. And I know the kids coming back around January 3rd. I mean, all in all, how would you explain it as a coach, someone that's been around for so long, been around the game of basketball for so long, and some of the changes that you guys have had to endure?
We'll just say it's a different year for sure. I mean, we're not the only ones going through it. Everybody's doing that or having to make adjustments to make ends meet and to figure things out. But I think being able to adapt quickly has been something that we've done a great job of that already, but especially this year, you have to be able to adapt. Things are changing daily, weekly. You know, you just got to be on your toes. So it's definitely more prep outside of the game of basketball and practice, just getting kids healthy, staying healthy, checking their safety, making sure it all works out. So it's definitely been a process, but I think we've done a pretty good job with that and our department especially.
Yeah, it almost sounds like being a basketball coach at this point in time is kind of it's a small detail of the job is what it sounds like.
Yeah, we wear a lot of hats, but we picked up a few extra, I think, this year. Again, it could be a good thing, too, where you were learning, you know, new trades or new things that can really be beneficial for our team, but just being focused and more concerned about them and making sure it all works out. It's been different.
No doubt. Coach, we can talk about the team this year. And if you go back to last year's success, I mean, it was a brilliant campaign. I know it didn't go as planned once you got to the conference tournament. But you had to say goodbye to a lot of players on that squad last year. In fact, only two returners from last year's squad, and that's Caselyn and Kinley Toomer. And so we can start by talking about those two girls who gave you quality minutes as a freshman. What have you noticed as far as their improvement now going into their sophomore season?
They were just solid as freshmen. They started for us, played several minutes, just great quality freshman players. But I think the experience of the last season, and they know what to expect. We get a couple preseason games this year, and then we jump right into conference. So they know exactly what to expect and what level we need to be at. So their maturity level and their experience has been very beneficial for our girls, and they've done a good job of helping them through this different year, but just preparing them in the same sense.
And one of the things that always impressed me about the girls, even back in high school, was the physicality, their physical ability. And, Coach, how much of a jump do you anticipate or can you anticipate from a freshman who was solid now going to the sophomore level from a physical standpoint?
They've made improvements. Like I said, they were already strong as freshmen, but just physically and mentally, they're just tough kids. They continue to get better in the areas that they need to, and they're just smart about the game and understand it, and they're competitors, and that's the biggest thing, too, and that's what everybody else realizes with them, especially their teammates. They see it, they feed off of it, and it's just been a good thing for us.
Now, with that being said, Coach, a lot of freshmen on this year's squad, and when you look at, I guess, the landscape and the expectations now, I mean, obviously, you have to expect a lot out of these freshmen coming in because, well, I believe everyone, but I think you got all but, what, three sophomores, right? All of them are freshmen outside of that.
Yeah, yep, 12 girls and three are sophomores.
And so when you look at the freshmen, has there been a gap there, like a learning phase, or are you happy with where they're at now as you guys enter into game week?
I'm extremely happy where they're at. As coaches, we've been impressed. Like I said, there's their drive and their willingness to stay engaged with all the ups and downs that have come their way. We're a young team, so court time is key. Any court time is key for any team, especially a young team. But from day one, we just really try to focus on whatever time we got together as a team, we just were as productive as we possibly could be with that. And I really feel they've done that, and I feel like they're ready. And regardless of just having three sophomores, I think we're going to be a very balanced team.
Who are some of the freshmen, Coach, that you would expect to have a major impact right out of the gate? And that's probably a very vague question, considering you're going to have to rely on a lot of them. But are there any that you would expect immediately to really just find their comfort zone?
To be honest, I can't really pinpoint one. Like I just previously stated, I feel like we're so balanced that in a good way. We have great individual players, but I don't know that I can pick out one or two freshmen. They really are just solid in every single spot and what they can bring to the team, which I feel like is an advantage for us with the year being how it is and maybe missing a kid or two each game. I think that's going to play in our favor.
Well, when you go over the roster, Coach, you guys do have quite a few talented kids from the state of Utah. I know people always love to see you recruit in-state, and I think it's a true testament to just how good girls' high school basketball is here in the state of Utah.
Yeah, we have great Utah kids. I think Kaya was MVP for her league. A lot of these kids were champions or, you know, winning records and just come from great programs and coaches and just have a knack for the game.
Again, our guest right now is Coach Chelsea Warburton of the USU Eastern women's basketball team. Coach, let's jump ahead. We'll talk about game week. I know things are going to be very fluid. I think this is probably going to be the case all season long, not just during the non-conference portion of the schedule, but even as we get into conference play. It seems like a very real possibility that the schedule could be changing almost on a daily basis.
Yep. Every day, like you said, you walk in, you have something different, whether it's minor or major. So it's just safety and health of our kids first and foremost, but letting them and getting them to be able to play the games that they're prepared for is key too. If we have to cancel games, hoping we can make them up somewhere along the way, just to get them as many as we can out of the 22 that they're allowed.
So what are the expectations for you as far as the team when you look at the first non-region games, non-conference games coming up this weekend? I mean, obviously, it's been a really weird offseason, Coach, and you have to be realistic with everything. You get Arizona Western and you get Colorado. That's Thursday, Friday.
Yeah, those are our first two games, Arizona Western. I believe we opened up with them last year, too. He has a couple of returners and several freshmen as well, and just like him, we don't have much to go off either other than his system kind of last year, but I just expect everybody might be hopefully not too overly excited for the game on both ends, because I don't think they got a lot of scrimmages in. We only got one in, but we're just looking forward to being on the court playing somebody different.
Yeah, I'm sure. Playing someone that's not your own teammate.
Yeah, like I said, we're ready to beat up on somebody else in a good way. But they've done a good job of practicing and getting better, but let's get it out on the court and see it live in a game.
And one of the things, Coach, that stands out to me when I look at the schedule, and I mean, we knew this was going to be the case with the way the season has kind of been condensed. You guys will play a lot of basketball in a very short period of time. And I mean, that's to be expected. When you look at JUCO basketball, it is one of the longest collegiate schedules of all collegiate sports. And now it's kind of been condensed January through the beginning of April. And that's pretty much it. So not a lot of off time.
No, and I think the girls are excited about that because we've got quite a bit of practice in and not a lot of games. But it's just, like I said, staying safe, healthy, hopefully away from injuries as well. And it's, you know, make some adjustments here and there with scouts and go play basketball, which is a good thing.
You had also mentioned to me, Coach, that you guys get your first five games at home, which is something that you obviously welcome.
Yeah, I think that's a huge thing for us because that's the only gym necessarily we've been in to practice. And we can get our first five games in at home. Being a young team, hopefully just build some confidence on our own court.
Yeah, absolutely. Coach, from this point on, I mean, as you continue to prepare, what are some of the stipulations that you guys have to obey by, especially going on the road? I'm assuming it's probably different everywhere you go.
We have a travel protocol that we follow, but our conference has kind of sat down once we get into conference, and we all are trying to meet the same requirements and expectations as a group, which I think is a good thing, so everybody's on the same page. Trainers have got together, ADs, coaches, we've met once or twice, so I really feel like it's going to be a pretty good setup for every team. They know what to expect and time frames and how to get it done and still be productive with their time.
I don't know how much you've looked into this, Coach. I know it's probably been extremely difficult, but what is your assessment of the SWAC this year when you look at the competitiveness of the conference?
It's always going to be competitive. That's just the league, and that's why it's fun to be in. And most of the stuff we know right now is just off paper because no one's really played. I think all teams are going to be competitive. They're just ready to play and get out there on the court. We don't know much about Vegas, obviously, with it being their first year, but I still can predict that they're going to be just as competitive as everybody else.
And I'm sure adding another team to the conference, you guys probably love that, I would assume.
Oh, it's exciting. It's less time to play everybody and a new team, new faces. It's a good thing to expand the conference.
Well, Coach, I know it's a great thing. The season's finally here. The girls are finally going to have the opportunity to get out and play, and I really do appreciate you taking out some time in your busy schedule to have a word with us and kind of update us on the way things are going.
Yeah, no, it was great talking with you. We're just, like I said, excited. It's game weekend. We're ready.
That's a great thing. Coach, thank you again. I appreciate the time.
Thanks.
Again, that's Coach Chelsea Warburton of the USU Eastern Eagles. Do not forget this Thursday. That's when the season will begin for USU Eastern. They got a Thursday night game. They'll be at it again on Friday as well. We'll talk more about that as the week progresses. Let's take a quick commercial break. When we return, we've got to talk NFL. So much going on in that realm. The AFC and NFC championships are set. We'll recap the weekend and talk about some of the new coaching hires. Last night, the Chargers got their guy. There's rumors that the Eagles are closing in on their guy. We'll talk about that and more when we return right here on Drive Time Sports.
Welcome back to Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM, Eastern Utah's home for the Utah Jazz.
I think every year when I'm watching the NFL playoffs, I come to the same conclusion. Divisional round weekend is my favorite because we get two games each day. And when you narrow it down to the final eight teams, it's either got a great story, or B, great football. That's what it boils down to. And I have to put emphasis on a great story because I thought we saw A, great football yesterday, and B, a great story. The good football came from Cleveland and Kansas City. And this Brown team, who was just, you know, this was a very likable team. And I didn't think that Baker Mayfield had his best game by any means yesterday. I thought he was good. He did have an opportunity to lead his team from behind to pick up a win. It was 19-3. And at that point, this game is over, right? 19-3, it's over with. There's no way Cleveland can get back into this game. And then Patrick Mahomes gets blasted, has to leave the game. He's in concussion protocol. Cleveland scores a touchdown. And things change. They change drastically. And all Kansas City needed in this game was for Chad Henne to be okay. That's it. They didn't need Chad Henne to be Patrick Mahomes because they had already gathered a double-digit lead. They needed him to be simply okay. And he was. I mean, he threw an interception in the end zone. It was an ill-advised pass that was way off the mark. That's okay. He still led them to a couple of first downs. Took some time off the clock. How about the confidence from Andy Reid? On fourth and inches, Kansas City decides to go for it. And I understand why they decide to go for it. I understand. This Cleveland offense is dynamic. I mean, they have some playmakers. You have Higgins, you have Landry, you have Chubb, you have Hunt. You don't want to give this team the football back. You don't want that. You have inches to win the game. But he doesn't run the ball. It's not a quarterback sneak with Henne. It's not a handoff to Williams. He allows Henne to take the snap out of the shotgun and throw what was a very easy pass to Tyreek Hill. It was a simple pass, and I understand that. But he still put that amount. I mean, the season's riding on that. I have to believe that if the Browns get the football back at the 50-yard line, they probably win the game. I really believe that. And I haven't even mentioned the play that took place beforehand when Henne had a 14-yard scramble on third and long to set up the pass play. Andy Reid did not play that game to not lose. He played to win with Chad Henne. That was fascinating football yesterday. It really was. And I do believe that Patrick Mahomes is going to play when they take on Buffalo. I do believe if he's even remotely close to passing concussion protocol, the league is going to let him play. And I'm fine with it, sure. I just thought that Andy Reid, people want to call him a wizard. Yeah, Andy Reid is fantastic at what he does. And we got to see firsthand yesterday why he's fantastic at what he does. He put the fate of their season in the hands of Chad Henne, and it worked. That was a fantastic football game. It was entertaining throughout. It had twists. It had turns. Tyreek Hill, fantastic. Darrell Williams, fantastic. I thought it was great. Then the game that we saw last night, Tampa and New Orleans. I know the talk today is Tom Brady is going to his 14th conference championship game, which is literally incredible. And I'll give him props on this one. He had to win two games in the NFC to get there. It's not like in the AFC where the Patriots, they had a cakewalk to a division crown and then they had to win one playoff game to get to the AFC championship. It's not like that at all. I mean, he had to go through a team, I know that had a losing record, but a very good front seven, and then he had to go on the road and beat the Saints, who were the number two team in the NFL, or in the NFC. Tom Brady was not good yesterday. He just wasn't. Devin White was really good yesterday. Leonard Fournette was pretty good yesterday. But that Tampa Bay defense was lights out. Brady threw for 199 yards. It's not quite to the point of Peyton Manning in his final year with the Broncos, where Peyton just, he wasn't good at all. There are plenty of redeeming qualities with Tom Brady, and I give him credit. He did not throw an interception in this game yesterday, and that is a very big deal, right? At this stage, your quarterback has to play mistake-free football. You know who did not play mistake-free football yesterday? Drew Brees. 19 of 34, 134 yards, three picks, one touchdown. Wasn't good. His QBR was 31-7. Tom Brady's was 75-7. Neither one of them played good football yesterday. But it was compelling because you had a 43 and a 40-year-old quarterback going at it to undoubtedly top five, top six quarterbacks to ever play the game. Surefire Hall of Famers. Yeah, I mean, the storyline there was fantastic. So I thought yesterday we had two different equations. Great football with Kansas City and Cleveland. Couple of calls go another way. Cleveland wins that game. Andy Reid putting his faith into his backup quarterback to save the season, which he did. Cleveland's defense unable to come up with a stop on third and long. I mean, that's basically what that game boiled down to. It was good football. I thought yesterday we saw an opportunistic defense in Tampa Bay take advantage of multiple ill-advised throws by Drew Brees. We had Jared Cook somehow fumbling the football at a very crucial stage in the game. It wasn't great, but it was compelling. It was a good story. Now you go to Saturday's games, and I did pick the Rams to beat the Packers last week. I made that pick on the assumption that Aaron Donald, who's the best football player on planet Earth, was pretty healthy. It became evident extremely early in that game he was not. There were no double teams that were required of Green Bay in that contest. They kept a clean pocket pretty much the entire game for Aaron Rodgers, and he picked the Rams apart. I don't think anybody, myself included, thought that the Rams had more talent than Green Bay. But I expected the Rams to play a little bit better defensively, and without Aaron Donald being remotely close to full strength, I mean, Aaron Jones rushes for 99 yards. He was a huge difference maker in that game. Aaron Rodgers played a near-perfect game other than a couple of ill-advised passes at the end of the first half that the Rams couldn't take advantage of. But Aaron Jones set the tempo. He set the stage for Aaron Rodgers to be that effective out of a clean pocket because the Rams could not stop the run. Still, it was 25-18 in the fourth quarter with 10 minutes to play and the Rams had the ball. And I know that Packer fans were a little concerned for a moment. I didn't think the Rams were going to win that game at that point because Green Bay was dominating the line of scrimmage. And there were a couple of miscues offensively. Lazard dropping a wide open touchdown. The Rams couldn't take advantage of it. They had their chances. A couple of plays here and there go differently. They had their chances. Fun game, though. Cold weather makes a difference when you're coming from L.A. to Lambeau. The Rams looked a tad bit slower defensively. John Johnson, Darius Williams, they dropped interceptions that were right in their hands at the end of that first half. But I don't think I can stress this enough. At 37 years of age, Aaron Rodgers is I think he's the best quarterback in the NFL right now. Patrick Mahomes, don't get me wrong, I want to build a franchise around him for the future. But I just don't believe there is a better quarterback in the game right now than Aaron Rodgers. And he's doing it at 37 years old. And the Packers have done a great job over the last couple of years building a proper team for him. I know that there were Packer fans and media members that weren't happy with taking Jordan Love in the first round. They're fine. And that defense has gotten drastically better over the last couple of weeks. I don't see Tampa Bay beating Green Bay at Lambeau. I really don't. It was good football. I enjoyed the Ram-Packer game on Saturday. Then we had Buffalo-Baltimore. And this kind of game was right up my alley. 3-3 at the end of the first half. Missed opportunities for Baltimore, absolutely. Justin Tucker may go down as the greatest kicker in NFL history. He was 1-for-3 in this game. That is so out of character for Justin Tucker. But the wind was just atrocious in this game. We got to see Utah Ute quarterback Tyler Huntley. He comes in for Lamar Jackson after he had to leave the game. Huntley was fine. Again, the weather was such a major factor. You look at Josh Allen. He barely completed 50% of his passes in this contest. His QBR was like a 51. It wasn't great. Buffalo couldn't really run the football either. Singletary, Yeldon, and Allen combined for 30-plus yards. But you know who did play very well in this game? Stephon Diggs. Best offseason move of any team in the NFL. Stephon Diggs was lights out. 8 catches, 106 yards. But the reason this game was right up my alley is because I love defense. I'm a sucker for defense, and it's 3-3 at halftime. And while Buffalo did put up one offensive touchdown, the backbreaker was the 101-yard interception, and you just knew at that point in time this game's over. Right? Everything that happened with it, it's over. Taron Johnson, 101-yard pick. That's in the third quarter. I think it was, 40 seconds to play in the third? At that point in time, you know the game's over. This was a great weekend for football. It's my favorite weekend every single season. And I know we'll talk more about what's ahead in the NFC-AFC Championship game tomorrow on Football Tuesday. But this was the one aspect that I cannot get enough of divisional football. Yes, this weekend's going to be great. We have two games that'll determine who's going to the Super Bowl. I mean, you can't write that drama. You love it. But we had 2 days of back-to-back football games with a lot riding on it. And I always say at the beginning of the year, all you can ask, it's not to get to the Super Bowl, it's to get to the conference championship game. That's all you can ask if you're a head coach, because you are one game away from the Super Bowl where you get 2 weeks in preparation if you can win that NFC or AFC championship game. Yeah, again, my assessment, worst game of the weekend, for me, it was New Orleans and Tampa Bay. But the NFL's got a fascinating matchup. Rodgers-Brady, you know they love that. And we have the up-and-coming Josh Allen of the Buffalo Bills against Patrick Mahomes. It's a great script to be written, that's for sure. We got a break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return. We'll break for a quick moment and come back to put the final touches on this edition of the show right after this.
Now, more Drive Time Sports on KOAL, 107.3 FM and 750 AM, the play-by-play home of the Emory Spartans.
Time to put the final touches on this edition of Drive Time Sports. Bring in Travis Anderson to help do that. It is MLK Day, big day for NBA basketball.
This is the day for basketball. Christmas and MLK Day.
Yeah, I've always felt like the casual basketball fan really starts paying attention on those 2 days. Christmas Day and then MLK, because you have basketball all day long. And it's actually quite fun. Right now, Phoenix and Memphis, third quarter, battle going back and forth between these two teams. The lead has swapped hands multiple times. Final scores from earlier today, New York tops Orlando, Atlanta over Minnesota, San Antonio defeats Portland. But we have a couple of games that I'm really looking forward to tonight. First off, 5:30 here in about a little less than an hour. We get the Bucks and the Nets. The Nets at 8-6. Yeah, they've been the fun story because of everything that's gone down with James Harden. If the playoffs were to begin today, and I hate using that term because we're 14 games into it, There's 72 games to go. But the Nets would be right in the middle of the pack. It's a much better team than what their record indicates. But I think tonight's a good test, Travis, because while everybody wants to pencil Brooklyn in as the Eastern Conference champion on paper, I've got to be real with you, and you can tell me if I'm crazy. They might still be the third best team in the Atlantic Division. And I say that because I still like Philly, and I still like Boston. And tonight we get to see them go toe-to-toe with Milwaukee, another team that I still really like. Now, I think when you get past those four teams in the East, you can throw everybody else out. But I'm not willing to just pencil Brooklyn in as the Eastern Conference representative right now.
No, I'm with you. 100% agree. I don't think, when it's all said and done, I don't expect Brooklyn to be in the NBA Finals because I think Milwaukee is still better, Philly, and I agree with you with Boston. The Nets have to add more pieces somehow to, you know, bolster that bench because right now it's KD, Harden. We haven't even seen Kyrie, but outside of that, they don't have any size around the rim. And a team like Philadelphia who has Dwight Howard and Embiid will attack that and they'll exploit that.
I think. Now, I'm not saying that Brooklyn can't come out of the East.
No, just right now, I can't do it.
I can't say that. Yeah, it's like in the West, I feel very, very comfortable in saying, well, the Lakers are coming out of the West.
Yes, it's the Lakers and the Clippers are by far the two best teams in the Western Conference.
Right. I'm just not willing to say that right now with the Brooklyn Nets. And I'll tell you a piece. If they had Spencer Dinwiddie, I would probably think differently.
Yeah, if he's playing and he's healthy, I take the Nets.
When I look at this lineup, DeAndre Jordan, it's perfect for Kevin Durant. You got a rim protector, that's great. Joe Harris, I think James Harden can play the point. When Kyrie comes back, I got to see how this team meshes. And I guess when I say that, I have to clarify. Don't mistake that as me saying they should not have traded for James Harden. I'm not saying that at all.
No, if you have that opportunity, you have to.
Any team has to. You have to.
Because those draft picks are worthless.
You don't give up a superstar in return for a superstar. You make that trade 10 times out of 10 times. I still think that they're going to have to be a major player in the buyout market. And look, that's very real. We see that every year. We see teams that are contending or close to contending or being the odds-on favorite. They luck out in the buyout market, and it's going to happen.
Yeah, here's an example for you last year where the Clippers traded a bunch of assets to the Knicks for Morris. Well, the Lakers just went on the buyout market and got the other Morris. And it turned out to work better for the Lakers. They didn't give up assets. So that's the thing with the Nets. You don't want to trade any more than you have to. So you just got to be patient with that buyout market.
Yeah, the buyout market is going to be their friend. I mean, just look at what's happening in Cleveland right now with Kevin Porter Jr. Right, he's going to be on his way out of Cleveland. Mm-hmm. You may be able to get him extremely cheap. He's going to play a pivotal role for wherever he goes. But that's where Brooklyn's going to have to look. Because again, if all things are equal, I do like Philly, and I know that they have struggled as of late. You can't pay attention to their record because they've been really just one of the most unlucky teams when it comes to COVID in the league so far.
Yeah, it's just wrecked them.
And that's a good basketball team.
But before everything, you know, with COVID hit them, they were the best team in basketball.
In basketball?
Yes.
Not just the East, in basketball.
In the whole entire league, they were the best team. They were playing the best out of everybody.
I agree, 100%. They had to run Dwight Howard at point guard, for crying out loud. Then I take a look at the Boston Celtics, and again, same situation. I mean, they had games postponed with Orlando and Chicago and Miami, and this was a team that just lost to the Knicks the other night by 30. This is a good basketball team. And if Kemba Walker's healthy, which I don't know if he's going to be healthy this season. I mean, that's a big if.
It doesn't seem like it.
Tristan Thompson isn't healthy. Jason Tatum isn't healthy. They still have Marcus Smart, one of the best perimeter defenders in the Eastern Conference. Semi Ojeleye is still very good. This is a good basketball team.
They're deep. I like their depth. So if those guys can come back, it's not about right now, but come, you know, March and April when we ramp up and get towards playoff time, that's a team that, you know, if they match up with the Nets in a 7-game series, I like the Celtics.
And we would be fools to not mention, out of those teams that we just talked about, Milwaukee, Boston, Philadelphia, I believe Brooklyn is the worst coach team out of those three.
I agree with you. You have Steve Nash, who's first year. How does he make adjustments in a 7-game playoff? Because that's where it comes down to it. Yeah,
we don't know, right? So Yeah, it's hard for me to just pencil in Brooklyn. I am looking forward to the game coming up here in about 30 minutes. I think it's can't miss basketball. Brooklyn and Milwaukee. Use it as a gauge game. Watch these teams when they play a few months down the road.
Because Milwaukee's got to prove themselves, too, because they haven't really played their best.
They haven't gotten to the Eastern. They haven't gotten past the Eastern Conference Finals.
No, and I'm picking them to come out of the East this year, so.
Yeah, I think we got some great basketball straight ahead, plus Lakers-Warriors tonight. Out of time of this edition of the show. We'll be back to do it again tomorrow. He's Travis Anderson. I'm Jordan Buscarini. Be safe. We are out.